Let's jump in. So this is actually, unfortunately, real Shyla. During Sudashashi this past week, one of the boys came up to me. Oh, you know about this?
No, but I thought I heard someone scream like, "I'm fixing
everyone." Yeah, yeah. So one of the young boys came up to me and said, "My friend ran into the air roof and broke the string." He said, "But don't worry, he also fixed it." So that particular Shyla, I mean, we'll talk about the context. What happened in that particular instance yesterday was in conversation with Rabbi Kahn, we concluded that that was called a reisa, meaning that was a negative thought about the Eruv, but it was basically shki at the point that we heard about it, which meant that Shabbos was not really over, you know, and all that, like, do malach and all that to get in a car after shkia, but that better to assume that the kid said he fixed it, that he actually did fix it, which obviously is not as a problem, but all right, he fixed it, and that the Eruv was still standing, and regardless, the whole camp was not allowed to leave Chadar Ochel anyway. That, you know, everyone involved in camp, except maybe for some of the families pushing strollers, but everyone in camp was going to be staying in that room until it was many minutes after Shkia, maybe not, you know, the full 42 minutes that camp Paskins, but okay, it would have been like 25 minutes at least. And usually we tend to run a little bit late, so we decided not to say anything. I ended up checking the air roof later on, and it actually was fixed very well, so I guess this kid, after running into it, should now join the air of checking and fixing team. I don't know what his name is.
I don't know
where it is. Where the air is?
Like, I haven't seen it.
So, in talking to Rabbi Matanky about how they originally set up the air of in Moshava is actually designed to not really be so visible because you don't want little kids running into the air and breaking it.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is that particularly near boys' campus and a few other places, the air of is not on the path by any means. Like, there's no reason why you should run into it.
Yeah.
But if you decide to run toward the zip line Sofiut area, then you will encounter it. Whenever there's a potential you might end up hitting it, there's a string hanging so that you can, not just the regular air of wire, but there's like a red
show that, like,
yeah, it's very obvious. So like if you like go walk to Sofiut, there's always a string there and it's usually fine. And that one doesn't get knocked down so often. But for the most part, it's inconvenient for people checking the air because it's not on the side of the wall of the road. It's deliberately in the woods so that no one runs into it, but leave it to the Chanichim in Moshava to figure out how to knock down the Eruv in the middle of Shabbos. This was after we fixed two substantial Eruv issues on Erev Shabbos, but okay. That's one of the biggest and probably the most important job of the rabbi at camp. It's the one that, fortunately, we have Eruv checkers in the kolo, but no one else is involved. You know, officially I'm in charge of tefillah, but like other people run tefillah. Officially I'm in charge of the kitchen. A lot of people involved in the kitchen. This one, woohoo, it gets to be on me. So, what happens if the air was genuinely knocked down and it was not 7:45 at night, but 7:45 in the morning, and I'm aware the air is down, but no one else is? What do I do?
Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anyone. Why don't tell anyone?
Because then other people will know, and then they'll accidentally be carrying it when the air is down. It causes a lot of issues.
Are we in agreement about that?
I think that makes sense for don't tell everyone.
Yeah, I think you should tell some people.
Like who do you tell?
I mean, maybe not like...
Should I tell you?
What?
Should I tell you?
No, please don't. I don't know. I think first, like, double check. Like, if someone just screams, oh, the air is down, like, don't just, like, announce it. Like, okay, I guess it's right. Like, first, make sure, like, it's actually down. And then, like, at that point, if it's actually down, you can't do anything about it, you can't fix it on Shabbos, and yeah, like, tell people.
Well, are we sure you can't fix it on Shabbos?
Is a
Jew allowed to fix it on Shabbos?
No.
Let's say a Jew fixes it on Shabbos. Maybe I gave it away. I buried the lead. If a Jew does fix it on Shabbos, the Gemara in Mesechus Erevin on Chaf Amud Aleph, on Amud Aleph, toward the top of the page, says that if you have a Mechitza, and maybe Mechitza and the string are different, we'll assume that the strings count as the same. If it's built on Shabbos, it counts as a good Erev. Now, you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to fix the wire. That's an Isser Deraisa. But if someone does it, then it works for everyone else. So if one person's willing to take the hit for the 450 people in camp on Shabbos, maybe they can do that. Another time we could talk about, are you allowed to sin for someone else? I don't recommend it. But Gemara is very clear that if Mechitza is made on Shabbos, it's going to be kosher. So we're not going to ask a Jew to do it. Can you ask a non-Jew to fix the Eruv on Shabbos?
You can hint in a very vague way.
Yeah, the same way you would ask a non-Jew to do anything.
It gets very complicated.
So you guys are very firm, except you're actually incorrect in this one regard.
Or what if you just have a Kavanah before and then it just goes for the rest of Shabbos?
Maybe you could just say, and this is totally a halakhic discussion, can you say that there's a chazakah that the Eruv is up at the start of Friday night, check, and it just stays.
Yeah, if you check it, then that's having Kavanaugh that like it stays through Shabbos.
I check it every week.
So generally, we assume that we check it on Erev Shabbos, and if it's checked on Erev Shabbos, there's no reason for us to think Erev might have fallen every Shabbos morning. You don't wake up and check. Now, if there's an intense storm, then it depends on the Erev. If you live in like a regular city where perhaps the majority of your Erev is actually walls and not strings, or the strings that you have are like telephone poles, and assuming that everyone has power, the telephone poles are probably still intact, then you're probably fine. There, Rabbi Chaim Jachter has a book on Erevin. He oversees many, many Erevin in the country and around the world, actually. And he says that a lot of them, like there are four strings in the whole Erev, and the most of them are wires, are like substantial telephone wires or walls. And unless, if you have power, then it's fine. There's no reason to think that any of that would have fallen. However, if you have Erevin where the wires are near trees that might fall, a storm, wind is not going to knock down one of these things. It's strong fishing wire. Yeah, but a storm that would might knock down trees and branches or might pull out, you know, the wooden stick that's in the ground that's holding the layer of up, if a storm comes and you have a lot of those, that might have caused a problem. Case in point, in Moshavah, the majority of the Erevin, Erev is not a wire, it's not a wall, but a wire, and if a storm comes, we almost definitely need to fix the Erev at some point in time, because even when the storm doesn't come, there are still things that need to be fixed. And so that's if a storm comes, what do you do? But great, now the Erev's down. Can I ask a non-Jew to do it? Usually we have to hint. Usually Amir La'akum is also, you're not allowed to say things. Non-Jews are also not allowed to speak Isur Derais on Shabbos. You're not allowed to say, I'm planning on writing something. Or you're not really supposed to say, I'm going to write down. They're not supposed to talk about that. We don't talk about doing malacha on Shabbos, even if you're not actually going to do it. But in the case of a Tzarek Rabin, in the case of you know, everyone in Moshavah needing to be able to get from place to place and carry from place to place, mm-hmm. you're allowed to ask a goy explicitly, can you fix this? However, you're not allowed, because Amir L'Nachu is a Derabanan, and fixing the Erev might be a Derabanan, depending on how you do it. And therefore, two Derabanans, the Makom Mitzvah, in this case, the Makom Mitzvah is everyone enjoying Shabbos and being able to function on Shabbos, we would say it's allowed. Now, why is it fixing the Erev only be Derabanan? Depends on the knot you make. Some knots are going to be in a Sederaisa because it's a real lasting knot. But if he can figure out how to do it in a not so intense way, then it's okay. So if you ask him
then
to say...
it's not like secure.
So if you ask him to make a bow, now again, when we talk about Chazakah, if I see the guy fix it, and then I turn around, walk away, and never come back, then unless a storm comes, why should I assume that it fell apart? It was fine just now. You know, when we check the Erev and we're fixing something, we'll like pull the wire to make sure it stays up. But there's no reason for me to think that it's going to fall. There's no mitzvah for me to think, oh, maybe it fell down. We can assume it's good. So if he puts up a non-permanent, right, not one that's like a bow, which you can't really do with these wires, but theoretically a bow, that would be fine, as opposed to tying like a real significant, you know, like a Boy Scout level knot, that would be an Issa Deraisa. So as long as you ask him to do a light level Issa Derabanan, the Mir L'Nachu and Issa Derabanan, with two Derabanans of Baka Mitzvah, you're going to be okay, you're going to be fine.
You should not be vague.
You don't have to be vague. A lot of times when people talk to Goyim, they're like trying to be vague. In a lot of the cases in camp, when you're asking Goyim to do things, you don't need to be vague. It's not necessary because it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. It's a purpose of what
you
need
to tell
them.
Why would that be in camp? Why wouldn't that work for like a community that's...
Oh, yeah, in a community also. A lot of times people think of the rules of Amir L'Nachri. First of all, there's not a shir about Amir L'Nachri. You're not supposed to ask Goyim to do things for you on Shabbos.
Yeah.
Just stop. It's only when there's a need. Mm-hmm. But if there's a need that's going to be to help the entire community, you don't always have to be as coy, if you will.
Do you have to tell them to do a light knot, or can you just tell them to do a knot, which might be a light knot?
What you're supposed to ask them to do a light knot and let the guy be like, well, why did I do that? Now I should just do this one. It's much better. And you just...
Do what you want. Say,
yeah, you just throw your hands up. We've had many conversations with the people in the kitchen where maybe we don't need to. Like, we don't need to have tablecloths on Shabbos. Like, it's not necessary. It's not going to ruin Shabbos if we don't. It's just going to ruin most of Shabbos when we spend hours vigorously trying to clean up. And so then it's not really a Mekel Mitzvah. It's just helpful. So then we'll talk to the people in the kitchen and say, hey, any chance we have any work tablecloths? He goes, oh, I can rip some for you. You can do whatever you want. If you have tablecloths, I would really appreciate having them. And then we wink or something to that effect, and all of a sudden there are tablecloths available for us. We do ask them to cut tablecloths in advance, but...
They don't know what you're talking about.
Somehow, there's never enough tablecloths. They always somehow miscalculate, or we overuse them. I don't know. So to the point of... The Shulchan does potentially suggest that if someone knowingly fixes the Erev on Shabbos, b'mezid, they violate the Isser, then as a punishment, as a knas, you're not allowed to carry, but not everyone agrees with that. Mishnah Berurah says that that it's going to be okay. The Mishnah Berurah also says that you can ask the guard to fix it, whereas the Noda Behuda says that it's not going to be okay, you're not allowed to ask him to do so. Now, why wouldn't, let's say we don't have a guy. There's no guy available for us. At this point in time, there still were going around. I almost thought about having a guy do it, but we ended up being okay. Why wouldn't we tell people? So what I pointed out was not everyone to listen. But okay, so you just don't tell people to not to violate Yisurim because they're not going to listen?
Maybe because then it makes them think that the whole other part of Shabbos that they were carrying, it was still down. So then they think that they did an Yisur before that.
Okay.
Like, it causes chaos, from beforehand.
Right.
They don't know when it was.
Now, the whole camp's going to fall apart. No one's going to trust the Erev next week, even.
They won't trust it from before or after.
Right. You can't show a chink in your armor, because otherwise people are going to never trust the Erev. Yeah. It's an interesting thought. The discussion in Chazal doesn't really come up when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. It comes up when it comes to Erev Yom Kippur. That there's a mitzvah to fast a little longer on Erev Yom Kippur. Mm-hmm. And the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah discuss it, that you're... Kol Nidre deliberately starts earlier than necessary, because there's a mitzvah to start fasting before Shkia on Yom Kippur. And you can imagine, similar to the 18 minutes before Shabbos, we want to start Shabbos a little early, we want to start Yom Kippur a little early, we want to end Yom Kippur a little late, although not many people don't appreciate. Right, yeah. There's a mitzvah of Tosefes Shabbos and a mitzvah of Tosefes Yom Kippur, which is not so fun, but we do a little bit. Kol Nidre is 10 minutes early, earlier than it maybe quote-unquote needs to be. And so the Halakha there, in Tafresh Chas Beis, says that if you have people who are eating and drinking until Shkia, you are not supposed to tell them that there's a mitzvah, because we're worried it's 5 minutes left. They could stop eating right now, but we think they're not going to. They're not going to stop. And if we're concerned that they're not going to stop eating, they're not going to stop doing this Isser, you're not going to tell them about it. Because we have a rule of mutav shiyu shogin v'aliyu mezidin. Better that they do it b'shogig, rather they do it unintentionally than to do it on purpose, than to do it deliberately. And the Mishnah Berurah adds on there that it's specifically if you know they're not going to listen. But if maybe they will listen, you're not sure, it's a toss-up whether or not they're firm enough to listen, then you should. And in the comments in the Shaar HaTzion, saying this is only if they're talking about lots of people. We're talking about three people who are doing something wrong, then you should tell them. There's a mitzvah of tochacha. Now, on a practical level, if you in camp, there are plenty of times if you tell someone that they're doing something wrong, they're not going to listen. So then that's a question of the mitzvah of tochacha, much more so than is a question of this shogging versus mezidin. But our general assumption is that if they're not going to listen, don't tell them. Mm-hmm. Better off that they be shogging, but they're still violating Shabbos, carrying. But if we think about it, are they really violating Shabbos? Or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has quoted in the Pnina Halacha, says that this is not even really violating Shabbos B'Shogeg. Violating Shabbos B'Shogeg means you're doing something that when you know it's Shabbos, but you didn't know it was Usher. Or you're doing something that you know is Usher, you didn't realize it was Shabbos. The former seems more likely than the latter. It's very rare that people don't realize that it's Shabbos. Although my friend on a Friday perm, and we were in yeshiva, woke up at 2 in the morning, started using his phone, and then looked at his phone and said, wait, it's Saturday. Oh, it's Saturday. Oh my gosh. And dropped his phone. But... you woke up 2 in the morning. That's what happens. Be careful on Erev Shabbos perms. But that's shogeg of not realizing what day it is, or not realizing this is Usser. What happens if you know that it's Shabbos and you know something's Usser, but you don't know that the Erev is down?
Well, did that kid who fixed it, he probably didn't know it was Usser.
Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Then why did he tell you he thought?
He didn't tell me, his friend told me. I don't know if he was involved in it at all. I don't know who that kid is. I just know who his friend is. He might have known it was Usser. That's possible. But Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach, in Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa, I tried looking it up because we have two volumes of Shemir Shabbos, but not the one that we're supposed to have, not the one for this one. But in Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa, Perek Yud Zayin, Har Kuf Lamed Tes, it says that carrying an Erev when you don't know, without an Erev, when you think there is an Erev, is called Misasik. What's a Misasik or Mitasik? Misasik is the example that we like to give, is that if you accidentally turn the light on in Shabbos without realizing it. That's not shogeg. That's not, oh, I thought I was allowed to turn a light on. It's not, oh, I didn't realize it was Shabbos. It's, you're totally not paying attention. You're just kind of moving. You are just misassing. You're just doing things and the light turns on. If someone's sitting in the grass on Shabbos hanging out and they're mindlessly and they end up ripping out grass. That's not on purpose. You're not trying to violate Shabbos. You're not trying to do anything. You're not doing anything. It just kind of happened. That's what we'll call misasik. And so misasik is when you're doing something without thinking about it. That's not really a full-fledged violation of Shabbos. That's a much lighter violation of Shabbos. And so if that's already going to be like some act that's like on a lower level, like a derabanan, then that along with the fact that carrying an Erev is always going to be derabanan. How do you know carrying an Erev is always going to be derabanan? Because you can only make an Erev on a place that would be also to carry me derabanan. If a rishus or rabbim deraisa, you're never allowed to make an Erev, which is why there is, where are you from?
Connecticut.
Okay. You guys from Chicago? You know it's like a whole thing whether you can have an Erev in Brooklyn. Have you ever heard about this?
So many people.
Because it might be a public domain, in which case you can't make an Erev there. So that's a whole debate in Machlokas, and other people can discuss it. City. You could ask that question about many, many cities. And so
Connecticut's not the place you're looking for.
No. Connecticut's close enough to places where it might be a problem, but I don't think in all of Connecticut you have 600,000 Jews.
No.
But if you're carrying outside when there's not an Eruv, it's a Derabanan, and Misasik is going to lower that Derabanan down even more so that maybe you're not even really violating very much anywhere or anything at all, and so better off not to tell them. That being said, Rav Moshe Feinstein is of the opinion that if you do have people who are going to listen, if the majority of people are going to listen, then why should those people win? Why should the people who are going to do the wrong thing anyway win? Let the people who want to know. If you're in a shul with predominantly from people who are going to listen, do the best of their ability to follow the halakha, you should tell them, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach appears to be of the opinion that better not to tell anyone. The psak that I'm sharing for Moshe Vaz, the camp rabbi, is that if you are where the Erev is down, do not tell anyone. Well, I'll think about that if I want to know. No, you should tell me, because as Mishnah Berurah was very clear, and as Rav Moshe Feinstein, I might be able to do something about it. Number one, and two, because I'd rather know. I'd like to know. Yeah. I might not tell my wife. I might not tell my wife who's potentially stuck outdoors with our kids. But I at the very least want to know. So yes, please tell me. Spread the word. Don't tell anyone except for Rabbi Zucker. All right, that's a wrap for tonight. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll find some new topic tomorrow. But God willing, we won't have the Shiloh again in camp.
Yeah. Wait, actually, I have a question.
Yeah.
If like the kid knew, like in our situation,
yes,
in camp, if they knew that it was like Esther to do, like
Esther to do it,
and he fixed it, would it still be a kosher, like...
So the Mishnah Berurah, I closed this already, but in Shin Samach Beis, seems to say that... I'll take a look at it right now. That if a wall that's put up on its own on Shabbos is good for the Eruv, if you put up a wall... If you do put up a wall, but maze it on purpose, then it sounds like it would not be okay, and you wouldn't be allowed to. Depending on how you read it, not everyone agrees exactly how to read it. It might be also just for him to carry versus everyone to carry.
Right.
Yeah, but because there was already an Erev there, it seems like it would be okay. And so I think in our case, we were in the clear. This would be the second time that we had a potential Erev or a potential Shabbos issue that, after the fact, turned out to be okay.